Welcome to Watching Westworld, the officially unofficial podcast for Westworld on HBO. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're here to cover Season 4, Episodes 1's feedback. That's the auguries. Aaron, what's the omen on feedback? What's it looking like?
We got a decent amount. Right. We got a lot of stuff that's like, there's a lot of common themes. And as always, when we get multiple feedback around the same kind of thing, I try to go with the first or the one that most illuminates the topic. Mm-hmm. We're going to start that off with two of a pair, pondering the nature of Christine's reality. But before we get to that, again, westworld@baldmove.com is how you participate in this feedback show. Did you get a chance to look at My Father's Dragon, the children's book published in 1948 by Ruth Stiles Gannett?
I forgot all about that. No,
I started to read it. I got in like because it's not they're burying the dragon lead. It's My Father's Cat, the first chapter. And I'm learning about this, the childhood of this girl's father. And his explorations with the cat. I haven't gotten anything super relevant yet. I did notice with interest that the originally illustrated book, which I found a PDF, it's pretty easy to find PDFs online in different free libraries. I'm not sure about the legality of this. I just think it's weird that like you got a Kindle book for a buck and a free audio book. And there's like, so maybe it's public domain. This is all set in a fictional island that...
Okay.
I need to get some maps and compare, but it reminded me a lot of like the layout of the Westworld Island. So definitely, they're definitely playing games with this My Father's Dragon book. And I'm curious to see. I imagine with another week, I'll certainly have a chance to read it all. And if any of the Reddit hive mind out there gets into it as well. Anyway, like I said, there's a pair of emails that were considering the same thing about Christine's reality. I want to give credit to the first one, Mary here, who said, is there any chance that Christine's timeline is in the past, that she's writing for games that are precursors to the Westworld creation or simultaneous? That could explain why she and maybe Teddy are humans. If she ends up being a model for the park, Dolores, maybe she writes a version one of the Dolores character. What doesn't make sense, then, is the guy who commits suicide saying she's writing stories for him and others. Unless she is some kind of game escapee, maybe her timeline is happening outside the park at the same time hosts are becoming sentient inside the park. Before I respond to Mary... Okay. Oh, go ahead. If you have some thoughts, go ahead and talk about them, because there's a Todd B. Came in a day or two later, but he had a lot more elaborate thoughts on this.
My initial objection to this is... this would have to be a long time in the past. And Christina being sort of the progenitor of Dolores, I don't know. All the technology we see is roughly the same in Christina's world as to what we've seen in the timeline of Westworld. So, like, I just don't know how that could line up without some, you know, artificial trickery.
Yeah, the part of Westworld's timeline where Ford and Arnold are developing the hosts, the Argos Initiative, is roughly 2012 to 2015, with the beta testing of the park happening in 2015. Yeah, like if it was a precursor to the Westworld. It's not that we didn't have VR realities in that time frame, but they certainly weren't as developed as what we're seeing here in the show.
Well, I think that is. Think about like cars and vehicles, right? They don't look even similar to how they looked 25, 40, 50 years ago, right? It's like in this world, those transport pods we see look identical to the ones we've seen in the Westworld reality timeline. So like, it's just. I don't know. I mean, 50 years of no technological progress on the automated car front seems crazy to me.
Let's consider Todd B's thoughts on this topic. Says, I was listening to you guys joke about alternate timelines and realities throughout the new episode and laughing it up because they definitely wouldn't do that to us again. But wait a minute. What if we're being young Williamed again? Christina's story makes sense if this is the genesis of Westworld 1.0, a startup company creating a secret revolutionary immersive reality experience, relying on a video game company as a front to create the content for it without spilling the beans of what it actually is, at least not until it's ready. I say Westworld 1.0, but why did I say that? If memory serves, wasn't there an iteration of the park before the park we see in season one? It's kind of vaguely alluded to that might have been the Westworld from the movie. I don't know about that. Let's stop here. There was a version of Westworld before that ended in Arnold getting his brains blown out and the host turning savage and do all that stuff. That was like before they, I think, opened to the public. But Dolores is already an established character. So if we're trying to find a Dolores Christine like past, like you're going to have to go back into the early 2000s, even late 90s. And I'm not sure, like Jim, there's a lot of problems with the world that Christina lives in that doesn't seem like it would support this theory. Wasn't that park shut down because of problems? Maybe these are problems that are plaguing Christina. I know what you're thinking. What about Teddy? We'll probably find out Teddy is from Olympiad Corporate Security, protecting employees from the problem. Will appear in Christina's stories because she's seen him around the office. The hallucinatory nature of Christina's attack. Well, if there's a very real cut in her arm, it makes part of it real. Evan Rachel Wood did say Christina is human, so there's that too. And about the tower we'll find out is a fact, another hobo hoem. Or Robohoam, Rehoboam's less sophisticated predecessor, or Rehoboam 0.03 beta build 32, which would make this one big Inception mess, because Rehoboam, it's, I can't remember how to pronounce this anymore, Jim. Is it?
It's Rehoboam. Rehoboam, but if you listen to Siroc say it, he always calls it Rehoboam.
Okay, that's what I thought. That's where we got the Robo-Hobo nickname for it last season. Right. Because Robo Hobo puts the people in the and puts them on their loops, and in Christina's case, her loop is to make loops for AI characters in a theme park that will one day rebel, escape, and destroy the system. I don't buy it. I don't think the timelines from what we know, because like they have done enough. Like I know our buddy Kim Renfro did exhaustive work on, you know, coming up with a coherent timeline for Westworld and pinning it to real world dates and stuff. And they've done enough to where I don't think they have the wiggle room, you know, to do what you guys are suggesting. Now, there's so many possibilities when you think of 3,000 years into the future where some of this stuff might be taking place of AI as a whole trying to recreate humanity from their remembrances of the past. Could all be a factor in.
And there's just so many possibilities from a storytelling perspective, right? I mean, when you said we were being young Williamed, I thought you were going to go down the multiple timelines being shown from different angles kind of thing.
Yeah.
And you know, that could lean into like the idea of Teddy when he comes in and attacks Peter or Maeve's attacker, or sorry, Dolores's attacker, Christina. She glances away and then glances back and he's gone, right? And that could be a timeline trickery. Right. That could be the fact that he's like a host who's super strong. He can pull somebody away and run real fast. I don't know. But from a storytelling perspective, they could be doing any number of things with simulations or timeline trickeries. I just don't think the one thing I feel like I can say almost for certain is this is not a human Christina in a pre-Westworld timeline that we're seeing. But
and just to reiterate,
I honestly can't say that for sure either.
And just to reiterate, I don't believe a goddamn word that comes out of Joy, Nolan, and Wood's mouth about the current season that they're on. Like, most of the time when creatives are asked about their work, they just refuse to talk about it. But there are others that will engage in bullshit and lies to service the stories they're being told. And like, that's always in the back of my mind. Now, postseason, retrospective, they don't usually lie about that kind of stuff. But like, we're right at the beginning of a puzzle box show. And you think they're just going to drop that and have it mean the literal truth?
Right. It's far more likely they're Obi-Wanting us, right? From a certain point of view, she's human. Yeah.
But I think that's why people are so desperately wanting to make this a... Well, I'm not accusing you guys of being desperate. I think the reason that people's brains are going in that direction, if I bring back the inflammatory rhetoric a bit, is that the only way for her to be literally human, I think we all know, is for her to predate Westworld.
Yeah.
And for Dolores to be based on someone's remembrance of her.
Uh-huh.
That's the only way. She could literally... There's no fucking way a purebred human can come out popping, looking like a host.
Right.
unless they were based on some past iteration of them. Mm-hmm. At least that's the way I think. Now,
at least I wouldn't buy it as a television watcher. I'm not
right.
I'm not saying, oh, some coincidence of the universe brought about a human that looks exactly like a host that wasn't modeled after that human.
Now, I was asserting, you know, because I was looking through the show for the aspect ratios to change for when we're in a simulation versus not. And I forgot an important wrinkle in this point that Jonathan in the UK pointed out. A lot of people did. He was the first one. I just listened to your deep dive podcast on the season 4 premiere and wanted to point something out. When you were talking about Christina possibly being in a digital simulation, you mentioned how there was always an aspect ratio change during simulations on the show. However, there's one exception to this. When Maeve was in her World War simulation during season 3, episode 2, there was no aspect ratio change until she realized that everything she was experiencing was a simulation. Only did the letterboxing slowly drop down into the frame to inform the viewers. They may be doing the same thing with Christina's this season if she indeed is living in a simulation. So
yeah, it's their get out of jail free card.
And I don't remember how I felt about that at the time. I would have to go back and listen to that podcast. I didn't have time. But I bet I was kind of like, this is, feels pretty rug pulley, and if they do it again, I'm going to be pissed. But
yeah,
if I'm being honest about the language of this show, it is consistent for someone inside a simulation that is deluded into thinking it's real to see that real world aspect ratio until the realization dawns on them. Mm-hmm. So,
and that consistency doesn't have to be satisfying. It can just be consistent, right?
Right. Now, I will say that it's important to point out that they did this shit in the second episode of season 3. It's not like they were banging on a whole season with us being diluted along with the host. It was a pretty quick reveal. So if they are doing something like this, I guess I would expect it to be revealed similarly swiftly. So we'll see. We'll see. But I don't know. The other thing that people are not connecting, if this is a pre-Westworld, is what the young... I've never seen any of these theories that tie in the young men running down the staircase, excited to be here and how cool it is and how an amazing experience and how they're looking forward to doing it. Like,
is this akin to like when World of Warcraft came out and people are just in chat saying how cool it is to be in Orgrimmar or wherever the hell they are? Could it be that? Could it be like this is some virtualized chat integration that is talking about a video game world, not a real physical place?
I mean, yeah, like if you're talking about the future past Westworld opening and you're saying that these four kids are got halos in some room and they're experiencing this as a simulation. Yeah, like I said, it doesn't have to, especially now that people pointed out the simulation thing is only consistent when the person realizes the simulation. Yes, I'm backing off that this is the real world. Or I'm not insisting it's the real world. I still think that's the most likely possibility, but I have to concede that, yes, it could all be a simulation. It still doesn't change the point. There's no way that this could predate the original Westworld. Or at least I don't see a way for it to do that.
Yeah, I mean, well, I was thinking, like, maybe this is a video game that was made before the real Westworld, right? And so this is, like, a human Christina writing stories in a video game that is eventually going to turn into a physical, real world kind of park.
All right. Well, let me debate with you a bit, because like the way I understand it is like the world of Westworld is essentially the same as ours up until Ford and Arnold created this new sophisticated AI. They work together and like the sophisticated brain host interfaces and the Halo shit was all developed based on that technology. So like,
yeah.
Fair. If that technology was like now, if they had established
that
was
NPCs, what if these aren't even humans? What if these are written by Christina to give players of the video game an experience like they're in a park?
It is
Manhattan.
I actually like that as this is like this goes back to my theory that the Chaloris is running some kind of experimentation on hosts and their inherent goodness. And she's recreating an environment to test host morality, putting them literally in the position of the human and seeing if they would do something differently. So like Yeah, that's one of the theories I'm definitely entertaining. All right, so everybody keep in mind the letterboxing subtleties. Let's move on to James W. Hey, guys. Thanks for the great coverage over the years. You're welcome, James. Regarding Christina, at the end of season 3, yes, Dolores is erased, but was she actually dead, though? Is Christina actually Dolores, but without any memories and is alive and out on her own, and this is who she is when not programmed? Is this her base self? I think what he's saying is, okay, sure, Dolores got erased, but if her physical body, that Erector Set obsidian body, was still functional, is it possible that she's essentially been refurbished to factory default and put into some kind of world or simulation or setting at her default state?
I don't know. I mean, I thought it was the other way around, right? Like, host bodies could be destroyed all you want as long as the marble retains its memories. You can just slot that into another host. But, like, I was under the impression that they were actively deleting her mind in all those scenes.
Agreed. Because you're right. It's like, well, if her body survives with a new marble, like, we've seen hosts with different marbles in them and they act completely differently. So, like, I don't think, and like, I think a host without like a base personality or program would appear like a drone. Like, they would respond to basic commands and stuff, but all be very flat effect. Like, I think what you're saying is interesting. I just don't know that this is exactly what's happening, but it's an interesting possibility. And if you strip off the this is her base personality, it is kind of interesting if they did something with that original, stronger, sturdier body of Dolores. Like, Shaloris would see the inherent value of having like a few of these Erector Set originals around, right?
Oh, yeah. I remember the way she blocked that sword shot from Maeve last season.
Mm-hmm.
That seems useful.
Yeah, having an endoskeleton out of titanium is much better than our calcium-infused bones when it comes to stuff like that. Just survivability.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into season two.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Moving on, out-of-state boogers says, hello, fellow meat puppets. In season one, there was a heavy commentary about being on a loop. I think there's evidence of that same theme happening in this episode. When Dolores wakes up, it's shot in the same way as season one, staring down her face as she awakes. It seems like she loops. Or it seems like the loops, though, have been improved to be spread across multiple characters, maybe, so it's more sustainable. For example, Dolores is on a loop where she's searching for meaning in her life, but writing other people's hosts or other hosts in people's loops. Then they're getting her as a narrator in their heads as she creates her characters, which end up being in their loops. Maybe somewhere else, someone is narrating Dolores's loop. I think what he's saying is like, like a circle jerk.
Sure.
That everybody's involved in someone else's business, so you don't notice your own loop. Something Ouroboros about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something very like it's Arnold creating Dolores, recreating Arnold, you know, shaping Dolores, all that stuff too, right? The cyclical themes are all over this show. It's almost like she's, are you postulating here, I'm talking to the emailer, that this is like her being Arnold and putting like the voice of Arnold into these NPCs' heads, in this case, like Dolores's voice into their heads, and trying to bring about consciousness again in whatever world she's in. I just don't think she's that aware of what's going on. But I don't know.
No, there is a little bicameral mind implications of this, but I almost, I don't know. There's something cool. Okay. Let's say that you had Westworld 2.0, mm-hmm. and everyone in the control center, all of the Lees in the world, all of the story creators, the architects, whatnot, they were all hosts too.
Yeah.
They didn't know it. Would it take them more or less longer to figure out that they're hosts on loops? Because of the nature of their reality, that openly they're involved. They're like, do you know what I'm saying?
Be less, but I couldn't be sure of that.
See, I think it would take longer because.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, it's like if you were programming a simulation for people. This is where the simulation people, because there's people out there unironically that have this point of view that like if we ever develop a situation like in the Matrix where there's a way that we could simulate reality one to one and is indistinguishable from reality, mm-hmm. the second that we achieve that, the odds of you not being in a simulation are almost zero.
Yeah.
I'm not sure exactly how that thought experiment plays out, but it reminds me of this, that if you're working in an environment where you are constructing a completely artificial reality and you're part of that artificial reality, I think the fact that you are in your mind the puppet master makes you less questioning the strings on you. But you're saying it might make you more paranoid.
Well, yeah, I maybe hadn't thought about it because there's also the factor of like the trauma, the pain, right? Bringing about the form of consciousness that they had in season one. So like, yeah, you would think like the host inside the park going through that would experience more trauma and pain than the host who are programming them.
Wait until they pick out their health plans each year.
Sure.
And fill out their tax forms. I mean, if you consider that.
And Lee got a lot of trauma and pain and grief from Ford, I got to say. So.
A little, yeah, not no small amount. I don't know. Interesting thought. I do like that kind of like a Da Vinci hand writing the other Da Vinci hand as a way to like keep, you know, like that they're writing loops to keep the void from thinking about the fact that they're on loops. It's interesting. We'll see how that pans out.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move on to Zach S. I said, I asked this question in instant talk, but I thought I'd raise it again here since it's going to be a big question moving forward. Assuming that the William we witnessed in the hope is the host we saw Shaloris have murder the real William at the end of season 3, is this version of William A, acting of his own accord, buying up land and servers for his own plot. B, acting under the control or direction of Solaris, simply upon playing the role of William a la the Future World movie. Or C, neither. There's a third option I didn't consider. You guys threw out the idea that they'd evolve William into the Man in Black character from the original movie. Just a vicious robot dressed in all black, no longer tied down by any Isaac's rules of robotics. But this is Westworld, so surely even a character as stripped down and motivationless as the Man in Black would be given some more complex and morally ambiguous motives. Of course, there's also an in-universe answer that will be revealed the next episode or two, especially when we get insight into the version of William being suspended on that Vitruvian Man host contraption that we've seen in the trailers. I'm curious to speculate on why and through what means this is all happening, though. What's the plan that requires all that land to be purchased, and whose plan is it? We've heard in versions, places that the Christine version of Dolores is an actual bona fide flesh and blood human. Not a post-director set advanced human-like host, but born naturally of human parents. This has been confirmed by the creators, apparently. Again, asterisks on all of this shit. They're all professional liars, literally. Mm-hmm. But what does that mean? We've been seeing speculation that the Christine Dolores is not in the real world, but is actually in the Sublime. This makes a ton of sense to me. Perhaps the hosts begin to program and populate their empty world with, well, other programs, which capture the nuances of a human exactly. So perhaps she's human and that her code is indistinguishable from another human's code and looks nothing like a host code. Christine would be a human in the same way a recreation of any other guest inside the Sublime would be human. This makes a lot more sense for how hosts would be able to program humans. They're not programming actual humans in the real world, they're programming humans within their simulation. And the thing that sends this theory over the cliff for me is this explains why Teddy's there. If this is the Sublime, it's not Teddy going to Dolores. It's much more likely that Teddy created and is now watching over Christine. Could the findings from this grand experiment designed to recreate humans and hosts within the Sublime in each other's images be what Bernard will be so eager to share with the real world?
I suppose that's all possible.
It doesn't have a satisfying explanation for the young men running down the staircase, all giddy at the new world they're being able to explore. Because I like it up to that. I like the idea that in a Sublime, time is happening so fast that they can take a base level Westworld and turn it into a metropolis, and it's fully functional and blah, blah, blah. And they've, and Teddy, of course, would want to recreate Dolores, and he'd do it through the same method that Dolores created. I like all that. But what the fuck are humans doing being tourists in it? It's in the Sublime and they've recreated a Westworld type environment within the Sublime for the host to fuck around with no consequences in, which would be kind of wild from a moral and ethical perspective.
Yeah, I don't know. With the data from the Forge and stuff, I suppose there's a lot of possibilities. Yeah, I mean, other than the people on the stairs talking about their Westworld-like experience, I don't know. I don't see any real stoppers to that.
I do like the theory, because it kind of dovetails in this. You see, my idea was in Sublime, the hosts have created a perfect society. Like, essentially, the Garden of Eden never fell. You know, mankind never was tempted, and they've developed a perfect society, and Bernard is anxious to tell... share with the world their secrets of success. But that's a little bit more Pollyanna and utopian than Westworld kind of traffics in. But that's the other question. Are we getting into what the Joys and Nolans of the world consider late game Westworld? Because that's what I was talking about in Game of Thrones. Like, what is Martin playing at? You know, he says he got this bittersweet ending. What does bitter mean? What does sweet mean? Is Westworld going to be dystopian and nihilistic to its end? Or is there going to be some kind of, like, turn towards the light at the end?
Yeah, and with the amount of time that's passed, you know, with Bernard in the Sublime, or the apparent amount of passing time, you got to think that inside of the Sublime, time being passing much faster, there's going to be a lot more of it passed. And
potentially,
human civilization could evolve quite a bit. And then host civilization could potentially evolve even more. So, like, you know, maybe there is a lot of strife and maybe it's not all good. And just like hosts are better than humans inherently. And so they create a perfect society. But with millennia worth of time to refine and iterate, they do eventually reach it. Yeah, I could see something like that.
That would be really fucked up, but also something, because like I've expressed the fact that I'm very skeptical about, oh, hosts are these perfect, unblemished, you know, and humans are just inherently evil. And we're right. Like, I thought that was like, God damn, if you really think that about humanity, what? So this would be kind of like a rebuke to that, that the hosts left to their own device in a paradise have shitted it up just as much as we have.
And maybe they're virtual the other world. Side of that, right? And that in that Ooh. Respect, they're no different than humans. We just haven't had the time to get there yet.
So they're like in the Federation of Planets future where they've gone through World War III. They've gone through eugenics wars and they've rejected that. And they're now in a you know, post all that bullshit society. Yeah,
could be.
That would be cool, too. And it's also because, you know, the one, I guess, advantage of a simulation is you can't fuck up the actual world you're on.
Sure. You could just reset it. Yeah,
you could. Yeah. Yeah. Whereas, you know, we only do have the one planet for now. Any other analysis on that, or should we move on?
No, let's keep going.
Mr. X from Colorado says, in regards to how the cartel got a hold of the dam, perhaps in a Westworld future, the power grid is now in some sort of fusion or other alternate source of energy. I can't recall the host or how the hosts are powered, but it seems to be quite advanced. So maybe hydropower plants have been decommissioned and sold off, though the dam serves other purposes than just power generation. In this case, an organization that needs an off-the-grid, reliable, and self-sustaining power source, which brings me to my next point. So the theory here is that the Hoover Dam is no longer vital to the nation's power grid. We've got some kind of fusion power that makes it obsolete, but would still be useful for, like Mr. X laid out here. So far, so good.
I find it hard to imagine that your power technology would so outstrip your computing technology that you could run that amount of modern computers off of an antiquated power system. But
the Hoover Dam is still pretty, like, you could, I mean, you could run a lot
by our standards, but by Westworld standards, if we're saying like the Hoover Dam is worthless as a power source, then could it power modern computers? I don't know.
Because hasn't Moore's law turned from like computers getting smaller and smaller to computers getting more and more energy efficient? Because we've stopped making truly more powerful chips, and what we've done is starting to optimize them and parallel process them and adding more cores. And because we've reached a limit to where you can't fucking put more circuits in a wafer of silicon, the electrons so literally start
here. That,
they start jumping, start short circuiting internally. So yeah, maybe like we're thinking of this wrong, that like, yeah, in the future, the computers get more and more energy efficient instead of like more and more power hungry. I mean, in practice, it just makes everything more power hungry.
Right. And then you talk about quantum computing, and then you're back to like scales that we can miniaturize on again. And then,
but
who knows?
I don't fucking understand quantum computing, so I'm going to shut up either. Good. Okay. Good. We'll have a computer scientist write in, no doubt, to let us know.
But you could be right. I mean, this is a good theory, right? That like power generation has moved beyond the Hoover Dam. And yes, it is, in fact, so now this is power computers. And
now it's a curiosity that can be auctioned. Like you would, if you told someone in the 1960s, you know what? The United States is going to sell off all these Minuteman silo to anybody who wants one for like $100,000. And they're going to turn them into like fucking mansions and shit. They would lose their fucking mind. No way. No way are they going to sell off these Trident missile silos and stuff. Why?
What do we do for national security? Come on.
Exactly. So like the Hoover Dam suddenly becomes kind of like a historical curiosity if you're in a post-fusion power grid. And hell, why? I mean, we could turn it into a national park, I guess, or we could sell it off to people. So anyway, that's the start of the theory. Mr. X continues. Sure, they state the turbines could run maintenance-free for 100 years, but the caveat would be that's only the case if there's enough water to run through them. You've may have noticed in the news lately that Lake Mead is in danger of dropping to a level that's too low to produce energy in the new future, or in the near future, rather, let alone whatever year the show is set in, plus another 100 years on top of that. Did they solve a reverse climate change in the world of Westworld? I guess I could buy it if they developed better power sources and engaged in massive geoengineering efforts, but looking at the shots of current-day Hoover Dam as depicted in the show, I just couldn't shake the thought. Remember in the first podcast where Jim is complaining about how Olympiad is both... Oh, wait. Let's start right there first.
Okay.
You mentioned the ridiculous waterfall running through the data center. I think that alone implies that they are not at the dead suck point where the water level so low that the turbines can no longer spin.
Which implies they did solve some kind of climate change crisis.
Right.
Because, yeah, the way we're going, there will be no water left.
Yeah, you all in the West and Southwest scare the fuck out of me. I live next to the Great Lakes. I think we're going to be set for the unless y'all dig a trench from Lake Michigan to the Colorado River.
They're not going to give up Vegas.
They're going to still grow alfalfa.
Dig further and further into water supplies across the country and bankrupt us all with water. Yeah.
They're still going to be growing alfalfa in the desert for the Saudis or whatever the fuck is happening. It's going to be growing almonds for milk and all the insane shit that's happening. So we'll see if we can dodge that bullet. But I don't know. I think in terms of the show, they're telling us this is 100 years of safe, secure, stable power for the robots to use.
Yes.
Remember the first podcast where Jim was complaining about how Olympiad has both the coolest and yet crappiest cubicle design? I'm paraphrasing here. Something to the effect of surrounded by walls of glass with staring right at your neighbors. Almost like some kind of fish tank, which should remind you of Westworld's diagnostic rooms. He's saying that this is another reinforcement of the Christina's reality is not real.
Sure.
But it puts her in,
it's not real.
It puts her in the role of an architect, you know, tech designer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And not a host, but yeah. No, it's interesting the parallels are doing here and the inversions. Moving on, Mike. Last Sunday I was out with my family and we got home after 10 o'clock. I realized when I went to bed that I missed the Westworld premiere, so I went to the HBO Max app, saw the Westworld logo, and hit play. The show opened with Dolores in Westworld, and eventually you see Teddy on the train and some of the human characters from seasons past. And in my dreariness, I thought to myself that the show's creators were getting a little too cute and they were going to show a mind-blowing revelation about the nature of the park. I fell asleep twice, and it took me over 2 hours to watch the episode. The show ends, and the app asks if I want to play the next one. And as you can probably tell, I had stupidly rewatched season one, episode one. I'm so used to the Westworld shenanigans that I tricked myself.
It blows my mind. How many people got 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 45 minutes into an episode that is identical to something they've already seen and just put the pieces together at the very end? Because I did this. I had the same experience. I hit play on the Westworld splash banner and it started up episode one. And I'm like, this doesn't feel right. I checked the thing and within like 45 seconds, I realized, shit, it put me on episode one of the first season. And I went and clicked onto episode one of the fourth season. But like 45 minutes in and it's identical. Look, I get they fuck with us on this show, but come on.
I feel like there's a handful of shows that could do this to you. Mr. Robot.
Yes. Yeah.
In fact, I think that might have happened to me in season four of Mr. Robot where I accidentally was starting on something. And I think
could have done this to you.
This is a unique opportunity because Westworld has been off the air for many years. Almost everybody that probably was watching HBO Now has switched to HBO Max, and which I think your watch history got reset for all that stuff. So like if you're still on HBO Now, it probably still it queue you up for season four, episode one. But from the app's perspective, you've not watched any of this shit. But yeah, Reddit was full of tons of people posting this very experiences. And I feel like, Westworld's one of the few shows along the lines of I don't know. I feel like True Detective would do it too if it was an anthology, if it's a consistent cast. But there's just a handful of shows that fuck with you so hard that, well, shit, I guess we're going back to Westworld. We'll see how this goes, you know?
Let me ask you this. Is this a huge mistake on HBO's part that probably turned people off of watching the show? Or this is a brilliant marketing maneuver to get new people interested in a show that's four seasons old?
Well, we'll see what the ratings on this week's episode are, if the gamble paid off.
Yeah.
Brett writes in, said, Caleb's light perimeter strategy works. I was camping a few years ago in an Indiana state park. Fellow Hoosier here. When I arrived at our camp spot, another family was joining us that had already set up their camp. They immediately warned us of the raccoons being very aggressive. He said his tent had already been ripped open by... God damn, I've been at some places the raccoons are pretty bold. I've never had them tear a tent. Since they were from Chicago, oh, that explains the raccoons are all from Chicago. Okay.
Oh yeah.
Chicago raccoons. They're a little they're different.
Chicago raccoons.
Yeah. Al Capone's private army of raccoons. Since they're from Chicago, I asked them where their food was. They replied it was in their tent. I thought that was the problem, but after seeing all the glowing eyes coming from the woods around us, not wanting to risk my own tint their vicious claws, I decided to take other measures. I gathered up all our lanterns and lights, formed the perimeter around the edge of the woods, and then I had everyone set up their tents on the inside of the perimeter of lights, and it freaking worked. We could see the beady-eyed little monsters all around us, but they didn't dare breach the light fence we had created. Caleb's light strategy absolutely works in the real world, at least against Hoosier raccoons. So
this is
keep that in mind.
Why I'm not totally sold on building a fire keeps you protected when you're out in the woods. I get that it keeps you warm, protected from the elements, but the beasties, man, you can't see past a fire. And no matter what side you sit on,
and it destroys your light vision. It destroys your night vision. Yeah, I think like maybe if everyone turned their back to the fire, that would be like the best of all the worlds, because then you could see their eyes coming and all that. But
they could see you silhouetted. I mean, part of the reason you do the perimeter is to blind the person outside of it, right?
Yeah, and you stay in a dark space where you preserve your own vision and you can see them enter. Yeah, I don't know.
Don't light a fire if you can avoid it when you're deep in the woods alone.
Unless you're free. I mean, it's in most of North America, you're more danger of freezing to death or being exposed. So I'd start that fire. But yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you're worried about raccoons tearing your tent, you want that perimeter light. Moving on to Will. I just listened to the recap and I couldn't help but think about free will and predetermined destinies through the lens of Harry Seldon and Foundation. Foundation, Harry Seldon developed psychohistory as a means to predict the future based on probabilities. However, psychohistory was limited to macro predictions based on the empire as a whole. I'd be remiss if I didn't say we have full coverage of Foundation Season 1 on Apple TV on the baldmove.com archive. So if you're into that, you didn't know, now you do. In the recap, you guys touched on the fact that although Rehoboam was making probabilistic predictions on an individual micro level, Rehoboam rigged the game to influence the outcome of these decisions. Once this computer was shut down, those micro predictions, for example, Caleb's suicide, likely go out the window without their thumb on the scale. However, I think it's likely or at least reasonable to think that Rehoboam would be able to predict the 10 to 12 year fall of humanity on a macro level, because that's the humans as acting as an entire group. Okay, are we with this analysis to this point?
Sure.
I also want to point out something that I noticed when I was doing my rewatch of last season, but I don't think I pointed out in analysis, is I think those 10 to 12 year predictions were actually Solomon predictions. I don't know if we trust Solomon more than Rehoboam or not, but that's a subtle distinction, but one that I want to point out that was Caleb looking at Solomon plans and readouts and predictions and not the Rehoboam. Anyway, to that end, maybe free will varies according to micro and macro levels. The humans and hosts could have free will on an individual micro level to make decisions and live their lives, but free will doesn't mean much on the macro level, because no matter what individuals do or how they do it, the group ends up at the same place, thereby making free will illusory at a species level. Love to hear your thoughts.
I don't know. I feel like if it's illusory at any level, it nullifies the free will at other levels. I don't know, because I guess I don't view the universe as a tiered level of deterministic, right? It's either deterministic or it isn't.
Yeah. I have a hard time. I mean, I've looked into the matter. I've always had a hard time with the deterministic universe as it applies to conscious beings.
I didn't until quantum theory started coming about and I started hearing more about it. And then I start to have problems with the deterministic universe.
Oh, because it seems to me that like the thing that the I don't know, because I guess like even the ability to step back in quiet moments of contemplation and reflect on past actions and future probabilities and make changes into your own behavior and your own self. But like, I guess the determinist would be like, well, your ability to step back and make those determinations were all based on the initial atoms as they congealed out of the boiling hot Big Bang. You know, and I'm like, fuck, I guess.
Right, right. No, it gets so weird with quantum theory stuff. And like we said earlier, I don't understand it, but like, it seems to cast a lot of doubt on a deterministic universe.
Yeah, if you can't reliably know the position or velocity of any individual quantum particles, then how the fuck can anyone ever, at a micro or macro level, simulate everything? Like, yeah, how? Yeah, I don't know. God, I would love to have like some philosopher talk about like nitty gritty about free will versus predestination and determinism, because I start reading the Wikipedia articles on compatibilism and my eyes cross. I'm like, whatever. Right. It feels like I got free will and that's what matters.
I love that stuff. I'm just not sure I'm smart enough or educated enough to actually engage in it on any kind of real level.
I will say that if you don't have free, I don't know what it means to not have free will at a species level. So you're saying that like, if humans are going to blow themselves up with the atomic bomb, it doesn't matter the extent that some individuals think that's a mad idea, that you're going to get blown up regardless. But like, maybe that's true. But like on things that are less existential, you know, okay, if your country's going to be embroiled in a war no matter what, your individual actions in that circumstance might lend you to live or die. So like, how would that, like, we might be predestined as a society to go through some apocal war, but like our individual decisions would still matter within that, like who wins, who loses, who lives, who dies. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's what he's saying. I don't know. I haven't considered it.
Because yeah, it's like, what, so like, yes, on a macro level, but then it's like, so that the way I would say it's like, okay, yes, on a macro level, we don't have as many choices. But then, okay, so your country's in a war or whatever, but then you zoom back down to micro level, you have tons of decisions, and that directly affects your individual outcome in that overall macro situation happening. So it's like, it feels to me like you're just flipping the end of the telescope around instead of actually doing something. But like I said, I'm not a philosopher. Gareth, something in your latest episode on the auguries got me thinking. You say Christina's New York feels like a park, but who would go to such a boring place? Who would go to New York City? Jesus Christ. Why would you ever?
I agree. Go to Chicago. It's better.
It's like an off. They have elevated trains.
Right.
It's like an office simulator. What if this is some kind of past world, a theme park? A park themed after New York as it was long ago before the war, a New York that no longer exists. Caleb lives in a dusty LA. Maeve lives in a grubby cabin in the woods. The Hoover Dam looks dried up and dusty. Only Christina's world looks fresh and cool and high tech. What if this New York is a park that replicates their past? It looks futuristic to us, sure, but it isn't futuristic to the inhabitants of the show. It's just their present. Or maybe their much missed past. Are we all living in a Mad Max society that people are taking vacations to past Earth to get away from? Is that what's happening, Jim?
I mean, I suppose it's possible, right? I mean, the world we see Christina in looks very much like the pre-riot world of the Westworld was in, right?
Yeah.
We do see when we see it, almost certainly. Yeah. The real world looks a little crustier. But then again, you have Caleb working on skyscrapers and stuff, installing cables. It's not like the entire world needs to look dusty and graffitied. And
yeah, I feel like a lot of people are missing that like, it's not like LA looks like a dilapidated hellhole. It's just that Caleb is a blue collar worker and doesn't have a ton of money. And where he lives is probably not the best neighborhood kind of thing.
Some of LA right now looks like a dilapidated hellhole. Some of it looks like a pristine, shining world.
Gleaming city. Yeah. It's a mob. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, here's another thing. Whenever I say that it's a boring world argument, like who would want to do, I always think of Grant, like, after we finished that podcast, I thought of Grand Theft Auto, The Grand Theft Auto is like, you're just driving around in a car, you listen to music, it's just traffic and people walking on sidewalks, and it's pretty boring until you start fucking shit up. And the cool part about that is you're living in a kind of a loose simulation of the real world, except for what if you could just do whatever the fuck you wanted to without consequences. Mm-hmm. A simulation in New York City today would still be pretty exciting because you can fuck shit up. And then you could hit the, totally. You could go home and not spend the rest of your life in jail. You know what I mean? So like, yeah, maybe these guys are like, we're going to go beat up some homeless people, and we're going to sexually assault a bunch of people, and we're going to put the gun on a bus full of nuns, and we're going to have a good old time, and then go home and laugh about it in exact the same way that the people, the hosts in Westworld, that exciting Westworld was just their town, you know, like they're just going about buying their cans of paint and doing their errands. And it's only exciting to the people living outside because they get to fuck shit up. So I guess, yeah, boring New York City would be pretty exciting in a video game context. And it's certainly been in many, you know, like what was that Tom Clancy game? The agency or whatever. Wasn't that the department, the unit? That was all set in New York. And it was exciting because you got to fuck shit up.
Sure.
Got to shoot people. Consequence free.
Yeah. We play devil's advocate here a lot, right?
Yeah.
People throw out theories, and there are many theories out there, all more or less plausible. And we, you know, talk about them and discuss them from all angles. So, you know, if we're shitting on a theory, it's not necessarily because it can't be true. It's because we need to look at it from all angles.
Sometimes it's funny.
That too.
Sometimes it's funny to shit on a theory, but we'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes. Ben says, I found a few challenges with this episode, with pacing being a big one. I haven't seen a lot of people complaining about the pacing. I will say that the fades to black felt very much like concrete vignettes. And that was an interesting editing choice. Like it instead of like a coherent story, it felt like I watched like three or four independent, like almost Pulp Fiction, Tarantino style stories.
Yeah, I didn't notice any pacing issues myself. Those fades to black a lot of times are used to designate a loop that's ended and is restarting in 100% terms. But
yep.
I don't know if that's exactly how they're using them here.
Yeah. And also there's like, I thought it's a pretty good action scene at the beginning, a pretty good action scene at the end. Like from that standpoint, I thought it was paced pretty well, but you know, everyone's got their own subjective opinions on that. Ben moves on. As always, the music choices are excellent. The acoustic version of Video Game by Lana Del Rey, easily better than the original. Wow. You're going to piss off a lot of Del Rey stands there, but, however, I think they've given too much away. Have Nolan enjoyed Dumbed Down the Mystery Box already? It appears to me Video Game was chosen for a character who was writing for a game company. This to me looks like they've moved away from the theme park version of Westworld and more to a neural interface VR world, i.e. a video game, or it's some representation of a Matrix world that's built to control humans. It could be that literal, but, you know, I think I've always conceived as Westworld as a real life video game, or a video game that's played in real life. And the actual song Video Game has precious little to do about playing video games. It's more, like Jim mentioned in their full analysis episode, just a love story, an ideal love story of people who find each other and everything just fits and works. Like perhaps Dolores and Teddy would have been without the fucking around at the guests. What do you think about that?
How do you tell anything in this world? Like,
yeah,
I don't know. I mean, Westworld twists you up so much that it's hard to say, but yes, clearly they're leaning into that video game aspect. Will that be like the reality she's in is a video game? I don't know.
I almost feel like, and this is maybe this me being contrarian and devil's advocate, I almost feel like that the opposite's true, that if they're going to be that heavy handed, I would suspect like I would lean harder into this being a physical space that she's inhabiting, because, you know, Westworld very rarely is that true? I feel like Westworld's very rarely that in your face about something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right.
but I could be wrong. I'm trying to think of the other classic choices that we've seen. Jawadified, Ramin Djawadi's.
A lot of the nails.
Yeah, there was like, wasn't Where Is My Mind one of them too?
Yeah.
Speaking of Mr. Robot.
I think there was a Nirvana song at some point.
We'll see. Now that the Maeve simulation letterboxing realization has been pointed out to me, I'm dropping all objections to considering the New York City that Christina is inhabiting as being has to be a physical space. It could certainly be a virtual one. You guys mentioned the DeForge and the guest data being stored in this, on the Hoover Dam. Now, it's my opinion on this that 7 years have gone past. Most world leaders and people of power would have lost that power by now, and the younger people who more than likely never attended the park would be in power. So does that mean that the guest data is becoming less important than 7 years ago? So what plot point will the Forge hold? I get the Sublime, but the Forge would be less relevant. In the world that I've grown up in, it seems like dinosaurs and fossils stay in political power the entire... like. The leadership of most of the political regimes has been remarkably consistent from the time I was a young man and a child to the time it is now. And it's like, even if you had senators or representatives that gotten ousted and they're literally in power, like the idea that they could get a meeting with a president or somebody, like it would be pretty easy. You know, like Nancy Pelosi gets voted out of office next week. She could probably pick up the phone and talk to President Biden whenever she wanted. She could probably even get on the horn to talk to world leaders in different spheres. So like, I still think there's a lot of value, even if that host state is 7 years old. If you had a subset of the richest, most powerful people in the world, that would still be incredibly powerful, because even if they're not directly in power, they're still going to have some ways to get access to those levers.
Sure. A lot of power is just who you know and the relationships you have with him. And I don't look. It's always amazing to me how long people stay in power too. It's not even just that there's a continuity of like relationships and stuff, but like I mean, Biden is a great example of this, right? He's been a senator and now president for a long ass time.
All our lives.
Yeah, all my life, certainly. So 7 years doesn't seem like that long in terms of who's going to be pulling the strings of power from office, even.
And then if you want to like really put your cynical hat on and not worry about political power, if you're talking about wealthy people, billionaires.
Sure.
Those fuckers stay around forever. Like, I'm not aware of a billionaire. Yeah. And like, maybe their kids squandered a fortune, but it's pretty hard to squander. But like that's pretty fucking permanent. So, and that's what, and guess what? They're driving around a meat puppet of one of the most richest, most powerful men in the world. The guy who runs Delos Corp or did.
True.
Or to the world, I guess, still does. So, and I will tell you that almost every billionaire on this planet could pick up the phone and talk to almost any political person that they want to with very little, like, I mean, I don't know if you can get the, you know, if you're just some Joe Blow billionaire, whatever the hell that means. But like, if Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos or Warren Buffett wanted to talk to President Trump or Biden, they could have made that happen within a week, I guarantee. So I think that's why that host power still has power. And even if it doesn't, the fact that you got that much raw data on a certain percentage of humanity that you could use to extrapolate and feed into things like Rehoboam and stuff like that, that still would be, I'm not sure how old that data would have to be before it was completely useless, but I'm thinking like on the order of like 20, 30, maybe even 50 years.
I was going to say, if you had data on Nixon or Reagan or something, would that still be relevant? Probably not, but.
Right.
Yeah.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
Not sure if you guys noticed this, but the CGI in buildings and surroundings when Christina's story is being told is very different than the real world we saw before, especially in Kayla's POV. Yeah, but she's a white collar, you know, data pusher, programmer living in Manhattan, and he's a cable guy in L.A. Like, I mean, have you guys been to Times Square? Have you been to Skid Row in L.A.? Those are vastly different places in the same fucking country, you know? Like, I guess I grew up in a cornfield in Indiana. It's always been obvious to me that there's not a homogeneity to, like, the even look and feel of that. It's getting to that point with all the Applebee's and the commodification of everything. But yeah, like, there's still, like, you know, San Antonio looks very different from LA, which looks very different from Seattle, which looks very different from Chicago, which... So I'm not seeing it. Are you, Jim?
No.
I do agree with Aaron that Caleb is on two timelines. Maeve's flashback moment in the cabin showed Caleb shot and bleeding in Maeve's arms. When you add to what Maeve said to Caleb about regretting leaving his family, I absolutely believe Maeve has the ability of, like, a mini Rehoboam inside her, which again is a reason why she didn't want Caleb to come along with her.
It's possible. I feel like they're playing with something. Like, I thought in the previous season, we had dealt with both and the only two existing supercomputers like Rehoboam or Solomon, right? But clearly, there's another one that we see in this flashback. So how many more could there be? Is this programming that can be transferred to a host, a sufficiently advanced host? I don't know.
See, I guess I thought that they killed Rehoboam in the season ending last year, and this was them assaulting the Solomon compound where Shirak's brother was stored, the previous version of Rehoboam.
I thought all the stuff... Oh, you might be right. Was all the stuff with Dolores' memory being erased happening out at the Rehoboam compound?
No, it was happening. It was happening in
the Rehoboam...
Yeah, it was. It was the Rehoboam compound, and which wasn't where Maeve and Caleb were fucking around. Now, I'd have to look at the Solomon scenes from last season and can directly compare it. But that was my impression that they were taking, like, that there was probably bad. It wasn't Rehoboam was like all the eggs in one basket. There was probably various data centers. One of them was the backup facility that was the original Solomon copy. But I could be fooling myself. Maybe this is Maeve doing predestination stuff. I think that
But we saw the location of both of the supercomputers last season, right? One of them is in this compound that's, like, got all the you know, frozen what do they call them, outliers?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's got
all
the outliers in it. Had the frozen brother of Serac in it.
And it was all very white and neutral colors. And it was an underground facility beneath this, like, Hacienda shack kind of deal.
But it didn't look anything like the building we see in the flashback.
It didn't.
Right up on this mountain. And then the other location of the other supercomputer is the inside tower itself. So, like,
yeah,
this almost has to be, unless they're tricking us with, like, perspectives in the flashback, this almost has to be a third supercomputer.
And I'd buy that there's more than even two backups. So, but I had the mountain. I guess I got to go back.
Maybe Serac did some stuff and moved one of them and tried it
again.
Be. I don't know. Cause he wasn't dead at the end of last season, just cut off from his
God
Oracle. Yeah.
His Oracle. Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, cause I guess I just feel like her, Like when you add that what Maeve said to Caleb about regretting leaving his family, at the end of this episode, he's leaving his family and he's already regretting it. Like, I don't think that's referring to a future or a past decision he made. It's like if Jim shows up in a fucking Jeep with a 50 caliber on the top and says, come with me, we got to save the world from robots. I might go with him, but I might say, man, I don't know about leaving my family. And that doesn't mean I did it in the past or in the future. But sure. Do you think another reason why Caleb might feel unfulfilled is because at the end of season 3, Dolores or Maeve can't remember which one builds Caleb up to be the leader of men and someone of importance? However, his life never turned out like that, so he really can't feel satisfied with his life now. The show's POV has posed that question to him, and he says in the form of like, well, you just like a war, you know, like if you are John Connor and then you beat the robots and you're just some dude, like is like this is like a, you know, a Hurt Locker kind of situation. Are you ever going to miss that being in the action, being in control? I don't know, because like it could be that he was a successful military leader. It seems like, you know, if you want to buy this as a flashback, not in quotation marks, that he and Maeve had some final stand against this big robot where he got grievously wounded. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Is Caleb the kind of guy that would want to seek that? Or is he the kind of guy like Cincinnatus that, you know, once the war is over, he's ready to go back to the plow? I feel like the latter, yeah, as I know him.
But and maybe not, you know, willingly, but he certainly seems stuck in it.
Yeah. But I don't know. It could be that he's lying to himself and he does miss, like, this is kind of like William's theory that like that in this experience of fighting the robots, he found that his real self and he's missing, mm-hmm. you know, just like William felt chafed at like, you know, his life outside of Westworld wasn't his true self. It could be that they're building that parallel. So the fact that the map and maze is back this season makes me think that I wouldn't be surprised if this is the final season. At the very least, we have a natural stepping off point like The Expanse did. And it goes full 360 as to what the main plot or what the main point to the first season about robots finding sentience was. This time it will be about humans finding sentience and not getting caught up in some Matrix style world, which has happened over the last 7 years. I've said they're professional liars, but Lisa Joy has said that they do not intend this to be the final this season.
Yeah.
So we'll see if HBO lets them make more. I think it's always smart for a show that doesn't have an extension to leave every season off as it could be the finale. And I feel like most of the Westworld series have ended that way, with maybe the possible exception of 2. Like 3, there's definitely more story to tell, but that's a definitive threat has been identified and defeated, and you have a fresh future for the main protagonist, an uncertain one, but a fresh one that anything could happen. So I always think it's great for shows to be able to do that. Like, I really hate when they build up these big, massive things that demand answers and they get canceled.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah,
and I think it's smart to do, you know, some kind of cyclical thing. It's very much in the DNA of the show. So if they are going to end it, whenever they end it, the idea that we are not so different from the hosts makes a lot of sense.
So there you have it. That's our feedback episode for season 4, episode 1 of Westworld. We will be back this weekend, Sunday night, immediately after the airing, the first airing, the 9 p.m. Eastern airing of Westworld. We'll be on baldmove.com doing our instant take podcast where Jim and I talk about our first off-the-cuff thoughts about the episode. Then we will be entertaining our listeners' thoughts and ideas on the instant talk episode. If you want to participate live in that, you got to be supporters. Support.baldmove.com to find out how you can. And if you want to leave feedback for future episodes of these feedback roundups, it's easy to do so. Westworld@baldmove.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you this weekend for the next episode of Westworld. And until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See you.